Hey there, I'm Beth Donaldson, an entrepreneur that puts hustle and heart into everything I do. The Hustle and Heart podcast will give you real and raw advice about overcoming and embracing failures, challenges, and obstacles in order to climb to the top. But it all begins with you. Listen in to each episode to harness your power and achieve more than you ever thought possible. Get ready to own it all because you deserve it. Hey, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Hustle and Heart. It's Beth Donaldson here, bringing you some great information with an awesome guest today. I will be talking with Erica Sinner, who is the CEO of Directory, and she is more than just a leader. She is a catalyst for change in the realm of empathy at work. Through her unwavering determination, Erica, also known as the Chief Empathy Officer, is on a mission to change empathy not only within her company, but also globally. Her background, rooted in humble beginnings and marked by hard work, instilled in her the grit and tenacity that propelled her to entrepreneurial success. And I also need to just let the listeners know that she recently just became an author and published her first book. So we'll talk a little bit about that today in our episode that is going to be focused on having difficult conversations. Welcome to the podcast, Erica. I am so excited to have you on and can't wait to get into the good stuff. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you started Directory?
Absolutely. So hi, everyone. My name is Erica Sinner. It is Sinner. It's an interesting last name, but I started Directory 5 years ago after spending 11 years in the life science space, internally helping launch different brands for a lot of different types of diseases and conditions that we as humans suffer from. And so now, as the founder of Directory, we get to help small to mid-size life science companies bring really important medications to market so patients can benefit. So thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you and have this conversation today and kind of jump into also the book that you just launched and becoming a new author, but we'll get to that good stuff too. So with the topic today being centered around having difficult conversations, can you tell me some of your go-tos to approach these conversations as a leader?
Absolutely. So I would say before even just my go-tos, I would say you have to have them. As leaders, I think, you know, we set the tone for what gets discussed, how it gets discussed, and also we're responsible for creating an environment where the team feels like they can discuss different topics or concerns or challenges or issues. I just think it really matters. I think if we're not having those conversations, we could have leaders who avoid like confrontation. And I think that can cause a lot of angst amongst your employees and drama, I would even say, within the workplace. And I guess for myself, like I see this on like posters and things. Read somewhere that it said, nothing will kill a great employee faster than watching you tolerate a bad one.
And I've seen that a lot too.
Right? Like that, I'm just like, of course that would be the case. But the only way that you manage somebody who's not performing is to have a hard conversation. So I think, you know, hard conversations are in a lot of different ways, whether it's personal, family, friends, but in the workplace, I would say like, you know, performance, individual, like cultural differences, job performance, policies, procedure violations, if they're like absent all the time or their skills that they don't have. I think there's a lot of reasons why you would have a hard conversation. And so I would just say like, that's my first thing is like, you have to have them.
Yeah. It's almost like lean into them too, because I know, especially like becoming a leader in the very beginning or even, you know, talking about personal relationships, like a lot of times they can be intimidating, but I've learned to really lean into them because like you said, you have to have them. And when you lean into them and they're productive and then they also change, whether it's like growth or being on the same page, it can be so beautiful. So I even talk to my team about that, or when I'm talking to colleagues about, it can be like a beautiful thing when you lean into those conversations.
Yes, I'm over here like nodding my head if you could see me and like, amen. Like, yes, it's usually once you start to have them, I think if you allow or create the space where both can be vulnerable around, hey, like this was the expectation and here's where we missed the mark. Like, talk to me about what's going on here. I think you can have real human moments. And after all, we are humans. After, you know, we're going to make mistakes. No one's perfect. And so you can build a stronger foundation if you do lean into them and you do have the hard conversations. I would say I plan for all of mine. So, you know, I don't dread them. I plan for them. I write out talking points if they're really important, hard conversations of how I want the conversation to go, what I think the possible responses could be, how I plan to respond to some of those. And then I role play with myself. Like I really try to think about putting myself in their shoes, which that's to me, driven leadership. You know, empathy is being there without judgment, but also can you see it from their point of view of how we're here? And so that allows me just to feel really prepared around all of the places the conversation could go. But also once I'm having the conversation, I can pivot to where I need to go. But now I can just get really more curious around them and how they got there and how can we do better? How can we improve? How can we move forward? But I think it's really important to plan.
Yeah, that's great. And do you ever find yourself needing to have difficult conversations that are unexpected that you don't get to plan as much as maybe you prefer, since that's your technique that you like to use to be prepared? Do you see that happening? And what do you shift there whenever it is more of a spontaneous, like this kind of has to be addressed right away?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that happens more often than not. So it's a great question around thinking about if you don't have time to prepare and they do just pop up, like how do you handle that? And I personally have an in-house performance coach and she always tells me, you know, get curious, don't get defensive, keep it about the business, the values, always have this human element to it. And so I think the bigger part when I do have to have a hard conversation is this idea of getting curious, like what happened here? How did we get here? Help me understand. And then as the responses are coming back, I think it's continuing to really ask the questions and acknowledge there what's going on with them of like, okay, I understand how we got here. So acknowledgement, I don't think says that you agree with them. I think it's more of just saying like, I hear you. And then continuing with the conversation. I think if you continue to be curious and again, not be defensive, and if, as long as you're not making it about them as an individual, like you didn't do this because you are, but it's, hey, the role and expectation was this, and this didn't happen. How did we get here? Or our cultural value is this, and I didn't see that here. Help me understand. Like I always just take it back to the actual job description or the actual project or the actual goals. And then also what are our company values so that it doesn't feel so personal for them. And then really try to just keep this curiosity about it versus being defensive or upset.
That's so great. And I can relate to the curiosity and acknowledgement because I'm working with the same person for some coaching as well that I got recommended by you. And so I love that technique. And so really what you're saying is even though sometimes these conversations come up spontaneously or need immediate attention, you still have a plan really because you know the technique and the approach that you need to take as a great leader to have the difficult conversation, even if you don't have, you know, your notes and step-by-step plan. You still have the plan of how you're going to approach it, which is brilliant. I like that a lot.
Yes, I love that you're seeing her too. She is brilliant, first of all. But
she is. She's helped me so much. So when you were the first time when you brought up the curiosity, I'm like, I love that, and I know that. That's awesome. Yes. She's so great.
But you're right. You have a framework for how at least to think about the conversation, so you don't feel so taken aback. You know
exactly. Yep. I love that.
Really, I was going to go to a place of, from a performance standpoint, I think setting the tone for your culture and how you want it to operate, I think also helps as like a foundation for hard conversations when it comes to employee performance. You were interested in talking about just in terms of my own philosophy of how I think about work culture. I'd love to talk about that too, but I don't want to, if you had a question around where, I didn't want to go off topic either.
Oh, no, no. I would love to hear that. I think culture is so important and I personally love to grow. So I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Awesome. Okay. Well, so I really believe if you establish a culture that is understood, like people understand what is it, what does it feel like to work here? What is their goal for it to feel like to work here? It's a different feel. If you go work at Apple, for example, then you go work for Amazon. I think everybody has their reputations around their culture. I, for myself, feel like a good culture is how employees feel on Sunday night. For us, we work Monday through Friday. So, you know, how do you get at that? And I think, how connected are my team members with their managers? How connected are the managers with the directors and them with the leadership team? But also, like, it starts at the top in terms of all of us have to lean in and all of us have to be open to creating the space to talk about, you know, where the misses are, what do we need to do, or what's the game plan with each other. But one big shift that I've made over the last couple of years is I'm a huge NFL fan, and I talk to my team around the idea of NFL teams are 53 people who are trying to win a game every single week when they're playing. That's a lot of people to try to do, like to go for one common goal. And every single person on the team, like on the field, has a job to do. And you have to do it well, and you have to do it coordinated. And so I say for us, right, we're a company, we all have our own roles, but we're all contributing to the overall goal. But in the same way of an NFL team, those players who are showing up every week, who are putting in the extra time, who are practicing more often, their skills are sharpening, they're the ones who are first string. They're on the field every single week. They're getting the opportunities for the big touchdowns or the big catches. Like, they're getting picked for those big projects. And then you have the team members who are not always so consistent. So they get benched, right? Like, they don't get to play every single week, and maybe they show up another week, and then you get to come back onto the field and you get to be a starter. And then there's sometimes that you get cut or you get traded. And when you get traded, and let's say you go work at another company and you thrive there, like, maybe that's then the culture you needed to be in. And it's just that this is not the team that you yourself are operating in. I subscribe to this type of thinking in such a big way. And I tell my team members, like, listen, everyone who is here, like, we are high performers, we are high achievers, like, we want the touchdowns, we want to win the games, and we lean on each other as a team, which means we talk to each other. And that's not for everyone, like, and not everyone's cut out to be here. And I think that's really helped too, where when everyone feels that pride of where they work and like what we're achieving, and, you know, we're helping patients at the end of the day, that's a big deal. In my mind, people say, I want to change the world, and we are getting to do that, which is awesome. But that also means, like, we get to do awesome things because we're an awesome team. I don't know. I feel like as a small business, and as we were starting, I made the mistake of saying, you know, like, we're all a family, and I really try to keep everyone here. And I've just learned over time that it's not so much like families can cross boundaries, right? Like, it's
yeah, more of like, most of the time, those are the people that do.
Yeah. So for me, it's like, we're a team. Like, we are a high performing, high achieving team, and we've all got a job to do. My favorite NFL team is the Lions. And so even in like a lion pack out in the wild, like the pride, they call them, they all have a role. And if you aren't doing your role, like, they'll exclude like a lion out. And it's just like nature, like, because everyone has to be contributing to the bigger goal of what we're trying to achieve. So to me, it feels more of like we're a team, we're a community, we're all contributing. And that means we all also lean on each other and have to be able to talk to each other, because we want to achieve the goal, which at the end of the day for us is helping patients get the medications that they need. I don't know. I thought that was
and getting that touchdown. I love that analogy. That is such a great analogy. And I also strive to just have a great culture and be in a small business. And when you start out, it's challenging to really like perfect that. But I love your analogy with the football team and the Lions even. And top performers, I guess, you know, there are organizations out there that don't really expect top performers or people that really want to be in it to win it. And so can you dig a little bit more? Because I love this culture topic. And I think it aligns also with the difficult conversations, because when you have to bench someone or trade them, AKA, I'm assuming that's firing them, letting them go, you know, what process do you have for that when it's not necessarily a termination that is immediate due to an extreme situation, but really more just because of a cultural fit? Like, do you have a process for that?
Yes. So we are a feedback is a gift, like, mentality team. Like, in the same way, if you're on an NFL team and you're going to practice, your coach is coaching you all of the time, right? Hey, adjust this. Hey, try this next time. Hey, I didn't see you look over here to make sure that you were going to get the ball. Like, we do, and these are little things that player is not taking personally when they're hearing it all through practice. Like, that's a lot of coaching that's happening in that, like, practice session. And so for us, like, I just am like, you're going to get feedback, like, throughout the day, after meetings, when we debrief, how we can do it better. And it's never going to be feedback that is to be, we're not trying to be jerks. It's that we're actually trying to make you better. Like, we're trying to make you be the person that, like, blows our client's mind around, like, what we were able to accomplish for them, how fast it was, and also the quality that we were able to do. And that means, right, like, you want to be around people who are smarter than you. I always say this.
Yes.
If I'm in a room and I feel like I'm the smartest person, like, I'm scared and I'm like, get me out of this room.
Exactly. I love that. I think the same way. And I used to think the opposite, but now I'm like, put me in a room with people that challenge me and push me and make me feel like I don't know anything compared to them. And yes. I think that's when you know that you definitely have a growth mindset and that you're ready to level up, is when you get to that point, because otherwise, you're just in your comfort zone, you know?
I'm stealing the growth mindset. Yes, I love that. Like, that is just, like, that's how I would describe how we talk about feedback. Like, it really is for your own true benefit, your own development, and making you show up better in front of our clients, where, like, the safe space is in-house with us, right? Like, practice with us. Like, let's get the feedback. Let's figure out how to do it better, so that the next time you do it, either with that client or a new client, like, you're showing up with even more pride. And I think having that confidence instilled in you, I just, like, not everyone gets to feel that way. And so this culture, I think, allows you to do that and really feel the pride of what you're doing.
I love it. That's amazing. And I love that you put such a huge focus on culture, because the people are everything, right? And I know that so well now, and just with growth as a leader, but also, I gotta be honest, the people are the most challenging part. I'm sure you can relate to that. So yes, being able to communicate well, and the feedback that you're talking about, and everyone wanting to win. I love that analogy. I might even steal it in NFL and football team.
I think
that's such a great way to put it and put it into perspective. So I know you kind of talked about this a bit already, but creating that safe space for open and honest conversations, especially when there may be, like, well, not maybe, but there's always different opinions and emotions involved. How do you create that safe space?
That's a great question. And this, I will shout out to our mutual performance coach, because she's going to be listening. So hi, Mal.
Yeah. Hi there. Yeah. Hey, girl. We love you.
We do. One of the things that she talks about, so because it is hard to transition to this type of culture, to say, okay, we're all high performers, we're all a part of this team. There are going to be, you know, team members who it's hard for them to get there. This might be the first time they're really hearing feedback, right? Like, this might be the first time that not everyone gets the award, that, hey, for you specifically, here's where I think you can do better. Here's what I think you could do differently. And that sometimes triggers emotions, for sure. And so one of the things that Mallory talks about too is, I mean, she's given me some words around, if someone starts to get emotional, really just be like, hey, you know, I'm noticing an energy shift here with you. Like, what's going on? Or, you know, this seems like this is an important topic to you. Like, what do I need to understand? Or what is it that you're not hearing from me? But again, it's you're softening it to say, like, what do you, like, getting them to be able to talk to you without saying, like, why are you crying? Right? Like, it's, or why is your face so red? Or why do you look so mad? Like,
yeah, it's that right? Curiosity thing again, without, yes. You know, without, yes, being more investigative, but more curious.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. And that you, like, if you care, right? Like, empathy-driven leadership to me is just thinking about people beyond their job titles, like recognizing they have an entire life outside of work. And so, of course, there are going to be times that things impact work. And in those moments, because we are such a team, because we have achieved so much together, because we all believe we are A players and we're doing all of the things, I think that's when you can afford each other grace. When something does happen, it's hard to offer somebody grace when if they're not consistently performing. And so that, to me, it goes back to like why it's so important to have these hard conversations, because we all have to be operating as an A team for so many reasons. But then when you give it your all and you're all in and you're like, yes, we're doing this, and then something happens, like you have a whole team who is like, we got you. Like, don't worry about it. Like, we've got this part and we know you're going to come back strong and we're going to keep going. But I think, like, I feel like someone listening to this might feel like, gosh, this NFL analogy kind of feels a little harsh, but it's really not. It's if everyone is performing and contributing and trying, like now you feel like you can actually lean on your team. You actually feel like you are a team, and then they really do have your back when things happen.
Yeah, and that's so powerful for all of us.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And I think it's okay to set high expectations for your team. Like, I think that that is okay. I think this idea of like you as an employee accepted a job description with certain responsibilities and certain expectations, and then your employer said, great, in exchange for that, this is the salary I am providing. So you've entered into this agreement that I find it interesting that we don't all think about it that way, that I feel like, you know, there can be some thoughts around, well, my job takes care of me and, you know, today is not the day, or I get paid to do this, or that's not my job. Like, those are such, I would be so miserable if that's how I felt every day. You know, you spend more time at your job than you do most of the time at home or with your family. Like, you should really like feel committed to the people that you're working with. And you can do really hard things and also be having fun while you're doing them and creating memories for a lifetime.
I agree. One of the many things I admire about you is your level of empathy and being the chief empathy officer. I love that, by the way. And also having the ability to lead from standpoint of, you know, creating a culture of top performers, which is very challenging to find that small percent in the world, and being able to let the two come together and collide is so beautiful. So I would love to hear a little bit more about how you really use your empathy strength, but also your badass to make sure you have those top performers and that winning team, because sometimes people look at empathy a little bit differently. So I'd love for you to kind of explain that and how those collide in your leadership style.
Absolutely. So Chief Empathy Officer is my twist on my official title of Chief Executive Officer. I just think it's a fun twist to really pull through this idea that I really am trying to make a culture that recognizes all of us as human beings. And so I would say for me, I marry the two by, one, I think recognizing, again, people are more than their titles. Things are going to happen. So if my employee is, hey, I have to drop off the kids today, or something has to happen, you know, I got to take my dog to the vet, allowing for those types of things to happen. If they're not right happening all of the time, trust them because you understand they have a life outside of work. And at the same time, for them, like if they're feeling like they're a part of this high performing team, then it's like, of course, like go do the things you need to do. But then that might mean that they have to work later that night or after dinner, the family goes to sleep. And you're like, I've got to get these things done that I promised the team I would have today for them, because tomorrow it's going to impact someone else. Like it's again, thinking back about that community. What was I promising the team I was going to do? And if something comes up, like, how am I going to manage around that? And of course, when it's an emergency, like, we figure that out for sure. But I would say the way the badass part of it.
I love that. And we kind of keep it real on here. So you are a badass.
Oh, my gosh. Well, equally, I feel that about you. So I'm fangirling over here about you. So
thank you.
I think it is important to pull that through. Like, I think And I'm sure you feel this too, like as a woman founder, as a woman CEO, as a woman in society today, I think having an opinion, getting direct, not being bubbly and happy all of the time, I think can get a bad reputation for women. I don't know that we're really there yet where we can just be direct and it's like, oh, like she just has really high expectations versus like, oh, she's a jerk, right? Like there's other words. But I think it's important to like lean into that. I think we should have high expectations and we are going to have a great team. And the way we find that even in our interview process, so when people interview, we give them like a piece of homework that they have to do and they have to present it to us like on a Zoom call. And it's always pre-planned that somebody on my team is going to give that interviewer feedback. Like, I really hate the colors you chose for this PowerPoint. Like, why did you pick those? And they say it like that. Like the whole interview is going great. But however they respond, right? Like if they're like, wow, I can't believe like that's how you gave me feedback. Like I spent a lot of time on this and I'm in here trying to get a job with you guys. And like, wow, like now you know this person is not like the way they're taking feedback is not in a way of like a growth mindset to what you said earlier. There are people when you tell them that they're like, oh, no problem. You don't like orange. Like that was your brand color. So that's why I was thinking about it. But what do you want? You want purple, green? Like, what are you thinking about? Because they know they're applying for a client service role. So if you're in a client service role, clients aren't always going to love all of our ideas. They're not going to take them all. So when somebody replies of like, no problem, like, and they even explain if they're like, I chose it because, or I saw this on your website and I thought it would actually impress you, but if you hate it, no problem. What color do you want? And then they just want to move to the next thing. And like, they've explained it, they've taken the feedback and then they're continuing to move on to their goal of presenting the slide deck to us. That is a person where I'm like, will you accept my rose? Please come join my team.
That is great. That is a great step to have in the interview process. And is that with every position in your company?
Yes. Yeah. And it's not the whole, like, I always say those things like, sell me this pen. It's not to like throw somebody completely off their game. It's really just, it's like a test run of like, this is what it feels like to work here. Like we talk to each other and we're like, oh girl, like, what was this? Or what? Tell me, understand what you're thinking on this slide. Or I thought we talked about this. Like, we're all just so open with each other that it's not like, I don't know, if you don't take the work personal and you're really more of like, let's think about what is the best way to present this or do this or accomplish this. That's going to like, I feel to me, it's like saving lives. Like, let's just all work together as a team versus we're all killing ourselves. And then, you know, we're not accomplishing the goal.
Yeah. And I think that step of the interview process is a great one to see if they align with the culture.
Yeah. I mean, we send our cultural manifesto out to employees prior to interviewers or interviewees, I guess you would call them, prior to the call, where we say things like, you know, we want to blow our client's mind. You know, this is what it feels like to work here. You know, we work hard, but we play hard. Like we have, here's our core values, which our core values are like, be hungry for new projects, for new education, for new experiences, for like all of like, right. And then we have be blue collar. Like it doesn't matter what the role is, like what the client's asking for, like let's roll up our sleeves. Let's figure it out. Nobody on my team will ever say, well, that's not my job or that's beneath me. Like you're fired like on the spot if you ever responded that way. And I think all of our team knows that. But again, that goes back to like, this is our culture. Like we're a team. We're doing things together. We're accomplishing things together. So, I mean, we send that out too in our interview process. And sometimes like people, like we ask them, like when you read that manifesto, were you excited about it? Or are you kind of like, ooh, that's a little exhausting. And it's okay if it's exhausting. And then some people have said like, it does feel a little exhausting. Like I'm just kind of hoping for like a desk job where I can like input data. And we're like, I'm
we're
so
not
glad we're
place.
Figuring this out now. Like that is not here. And we want you to be happy too. So
yeah. Yeah.
Interview over.
That's great. All right. So let's put a little bit of twist on the emotions behind difficult conversations and talk about some techniques that you use as a leader to manage your emotions during these difficult conversations. And is it more of an approach that you allow your emotions to surface or do you suppress them during difficult conversations?
That's a good question. So, I mean, it depends on how difficult the conversation is going to be, right? If you're letting somebody go, that's very different then we've missed a really big project, but they're still on the team and you want to build them up to moving forward. And then there's the like other kinds of difficult conversations you can have. So I guess for me, before any difficult conversation, I'm always taking deep, beautiful breaths to just calm my own self down. It's hard when you own the company because it feels very personal. It's your brand, it's your organization, it's what your blood, sweat, and tears have gone into. So I have learned I need to separate that out and really think about in this moment, what is it that we're talking about now? It's not bigger thing. It's what is it that we're talking about now? I use the curiosity, which I think if you can really come at it from a curiosity standpoint, then it lowers, I think, even your blood pressure and your heartbeat around like, I'm not angry. I'm just trying to understand.
Sure.
I think when we have missed the mark on like a really important project, I definitely think, it's not that my emotions come through from, I don't cry, I don't yell, but I think I can get I get serious, right? I'm not bubbly, I'm not laughing. I'm just like, hey, we have to have a real conversation here. Like what happened here? And then what's the impact of the things that happened so that they understand too, the gravity of like the situation that we're talking about. But it's okay for them to have big feelings. I guess that's the other part too of when I'm having a hard conversation and you're watching somebody receiving the feedback or the news and they're starting to have big feelings, I think remembering that people are allowed to have really big feelings, and especially when it's about change or about feedback, and it's not my responsibility to manage their expectations. My responsibility is to make sure we all understand what's best for the company, what are we trying to do, what are we trying to accomplish, and it is okay for them to have big feelings. So even if they walk away from that conversation and we're not bubbly together, we're not totally aligned, they're going to have to go think about it and we're going to regroup. Like I can't let that sit with me. Otherwise, like I'm going to get gray hair all over before I turn 40, but it's acknowledging that, right? Like everyone's human. And that's also part of empathy of even when you have hard conversations, expect and be okay that you're not going to have always a resolution at the end where both people agree on like, this is what happened, or here's what we think we need to move forward. And that's okay. It's okay for them to have big feelings and then to regroup later.
Yeah, absolutely. And learn from it. And, the biggest thing with a lot of the difficult conversations, if it's not one that's a termination or an end of a relationship and the relationship is continuing, whether that's personal or professional, it's really just about learning from it and making those adjustments and changes to yes. become better, because we all have room for growth.
100%. There's a book actually. It's 101 Tough Conversations to Have with Employees by Paul Falcone. This book is like game changing. It will walk through any type. Like it's got all sorts of examples, and it actually has like your script and their response and your response and their response for all of these different, and even just reading through it, I think for me, it helps even change the words that I use to make it less emotional and more about the company. I would recommend that book too, as like part of my toolkit of how I have hard conversations and still be kind, right? That's a Brené Brown, like clear is kind. So
I love that. I wrote that down too, because I haven't read that book. So I'm definitely going to read it and check that out. Can you share a little bit about when you're having these difficult and tough conversations, how you deal with resistance and really defensive reactions from whether it's your team or a personal conversation?
Yeah, I think if somebody is really having a hard time, or they're really resisting, or they're really like not okay, there does come a point when you can say to somebody, hey, this doesn't feel like it's productive. And I can tell that you're really upset. This seems like this is not a good time for you to continue this conversation. So I think you've heard my feedback. Let's regroup tomorrow after we've had a night to sleep on it and you've had some time to reflect and, let's get back on tomorrow. Yeah, like I think it's okay for people to have reactions. And in those situations, I think if they continue to happen, I think that's then another hard conversation where it's like, hey, I can't seem to give you feedback without you crying or without you yelling or without you getting upset. And like, that's also not our culture. But I think it's appropriate that there are going to be times that does happen. And it is okay to say, I can see you're having, you know, a reaction. This is not productive any longer in this moment. Like, let's step away and like, let's get back together, and then figure out when you get back together is usually how I handle those conversations that go a little harder than even just hard.
Yeah, that's great. I take that approach a lot too, personally and professionally. Sometimes it's kind of like that same concept. If you're trying to find something and you can't find it and you're looking everywhere, you're like, let me just step away for a little bit, regroup, come back. Yes. And then you find it, you know, where you least expect it. So I think that's powerful. And then it gives everyone time to kind of get in their zen and do what they have to do to maybe prepare for the conversation.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I love that. It's true. I mean, and then you have like a fresh approach, fresh eyes, slept on it, like all of it.
Exactly. That's great. Can you share some tips for maintaining positive relationships after having a difficult conversation? I know based on like your culture at Directory, a lot of it is because you just create that culture, and having these open conversations is the norm. But just generally speaking to the listeners, because a lot of people struggle with this, so I'm so excited for the listeners to learn all the pearls. What are some tips of maintaining positive relationships after having these challenging and difficult conversations?
Yeah, I love that you ask. I feel like a lot of people want to say, how do you have the hard conversation? But no one thinks about like, and then what? We make it a point that when we have hard conversations, like you've had the conversation and then you're not holding on to it. That because we are a team, because we all know we're contributing, because we just had a hard conversation and we've given the feedback, that the expectation is that the other person has heard it, they're going to apply whatever the feedback was, and we're all moving forward. So if you and I are having a hard conversation in this call, and then we're going to move on to the next call with the rest of the team, that next call starts like we're fresh again. It's not going to be, you know, one person still holding on to it, or they're not replying to emails, or making, you know, side comments or rolling their eyes or whatever it is. Like we don't do that. Like we are a team. We have hard conversations, but then you got to let it go. And if things are continuing to happen right now, you have to go back and have a conversation again, but you can't be like holding on to things. And I also think that's when I first started to say, like, you just have to have these conversations, because if you don't, then you build up resentment, and then you're going to start having some of those reactions. You won't even be able to help it. You have so much resentment built up that when it finally bubbles up, now you've blown up at someone and they didn't deserve it because they didn't even know it was coming. Like, you didn't give them feedback along the way, and so they didn't even know it was a big deal, whatever it is that's happening. So I think that's really how we maintain it, is to give in the moment feedback. If it's something that's like something small, like we don't wait until our weekly one-on-one. So if something happened on Monday and our weekly one-on-one's on Friday and it's just something quick, you could just pick up the phone and call and be like, hey, that last meeting we were on, like, I want to just give you some feedback on this. Or there was something that I saw that didn't align with our values. Like, it's a quick thing. Okay, great. Just wanted to catch up with you. And then you can get off the phone. But if you put it on your list for the one-on-one, then you get to Friday and you mention that small thing that they did in that meeting on Monday, they feel like, wow, that must have been such a big thing because they held on to that all week, like they were thinking about that. And the truth might be that you weren't, you just were putting it on your list. But I think it's really important to do like in the moment feedback, and then also to like move on from it. Let the person apply the feedback, and then don't keep punishing them by holding on to it. It keeps happening, of course, have another conversation, but you have to give them a chance too.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to just letting it go, that's like anything in life. I know that I've gotten through therapy and things like that. I don't hold on to grudges. When something's over, personally or professionally, I let it go. I mean, sometimes it takes a little bit of time and extra therapy, of course, but holding on to a grudge is kind of the same concept as what we're talking about here. If you don't let it go, and then that just kind of flows into every area, and it will build up, and then ultimately will affect the culture and the productivity of, you know, the employees as well, if you hold on to that. And I really like that you share the feedback immediately if it's something small, because the other thing, the twist with that, or the great thing with that is anytime you hold on to anything, even if it's with a friend, a girlfriend, and it was something that bothered you, it's going to build up. You know what I mean? And then if you don't talk about it and talk about it sooner than later, then it's going to continue to build up and it could turn into something bigger than it really is when it's just something so simple.
100%. Yes, I couldn't agree more.
This is such a fun conversation. I love this. Because again, I used to run from difficult conversations and now I'm the person that wants to like get deep and like, let's talk about it. This can be so beautiful if we can talk about it in both. We all have different, you know, perspectives and things going on in our life, like you said. So it's just really cool to talk with people. And there's a lot of professionals that I surround myself with, colleagues and people in the industry, that they'll say something, whether it's on like their podcast or at a conference, and I'll be like, what is going on? Like, I don't see that perspective. But then I'll sit down with them and to just, not that this is necessarily a difficult conversation, but it's leaning into that like different of opinion. And then you talk with them and you're like, wow, that is so true. And sometimes I have found myself like incorporating things, whether it's like a business process or a new aesthetic technique or whatever the case may be, based on something that if I didn't lean into that or learn more about it, I would have never evolved in that way too. So that's a really cool thing, I think, with leaning into disagreements or difficult conversations or just opening your perspective about things and having those conversations.
Goes back to that curiosity.
That curiosity. Yes, I love it. My grandma always told me I was so curious because, you know, oftentimes as a kid, my family would tease and be like, you're so nosy. You're always asking so many questions. And my grandma would always have my back and she would be like, she's just curious. And curious people are the ones that end up being smart. You know, grandmas always have your back. But yes. I was called curious my whole life. So I really like the curiosity thing because I think I'm great at being curious. So that's awesome. I love that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, I know you recommended earlier in the conversation about the book, which I'm going to download, 101 Difficult Conversations. And are there any other resources or tools that you would recommend for individuals looking to improve their ability to have hard conversations, particularly with empathy involved?
Yeah, let me think. I'm looking at my bookshelf. I have another book called Effective Phrases for Performance Appraisals. It's a guide to successful evaluations by James Neal and lets you go through, like, depending on what you want to give feedback on. So let's say it's around, I don't know, accuracy. You can say fetches phrases like holds people accountable for accuracy or is committed to achieving accuracy. So you can make that a positive or a negative depending on how you want to have the conversation. What I like about it is I go through it and I read it sometimes and I just think about depersonalizes the feedback to your employee and it kind of takes the mental load off of how you want to say it. And for me, by being able to do that, I think I can lean more into how I want them to feel, right? Like I don't have to think of all of the words. I can more think about how I want them to feel about the feedback and just how my own of like, I care about them. I want them to do well in their roles. I want them to be proud of what they're doing. But like that book too also helps me just, it's at least a thought starter around how I want to say things. And then it doesn't feel like such a heavy lift. Whether you're a CEO of a company or a manager or your life is still, work is hard. You got a lot of to-dos. You got a lot of asks. You got a lot of things going on that for me, little things like that, that can help me at least be thought starters so that then I can actually spend the emotional investment around making sure that that person feels like the feedback is coming from a caring place has helped me a lot.
That's awesome. That's great. And so you do read a lot of books. Do you normally do the Audible or do you still like to read hardbacks? I'm just curious.
I like to read because I am such a nerd. I have I highlight things or I put little tab things so I can go back and look at stuff I really like. And I feel like on the Audible, oh my gosh, I'll listen to something and I'm like, oh, I got to write that down. Oh, I got to write that down too.
Yeah. No, I see the pros and cons to both. And I've always been a paperback person and I still do that. I like the whole tangible thing about it. I like taking notes and highlighting as well. But then over the last few years, I've also started Audibles because with being busy, sometimes, you know, I'm doing it in the car or when I'm folding laundry or whatever the case may be. So I have no excuse. Or when I'm curling my hair, even if I get 10 or 15 minutes in a day of reading, it's you know, helping me with my growth mindset.
That's so what you do more of that.
I do a mix of both. And also on the Audible, I like to listen to different podcasts too.
Yeah, I should do more of that. I like that a lot.
I do like to keep the hardback and having that physical book so I can take notes. And something about like laying in my chair or my bed and reading it is just different. So Same. That's kind of like my wind down time.
Yes, same.
So looking back on your journey so far, what are you most proud of accomplishing and what are your goals for the future?
So let's see. I am really proud of our culture. I think we do an employee survey every year and it's anonymous, so they can answer whatever they want. And there's like open text. So every time we send it out, you can have a feeling of like, what are they going to say? I mean, one of the questions even is like, what do you feel about your CEO's leadership? So it's like directly feedback for me. But I think that further demonstrates like we are a culture of feedback and we are a culture of openness and listening. And every year we get it back and it's incredible. And I think we have day to day, we talk to each other. So just, I really feel the things that some of my employees share with me on a, like a random day, I'm really proud of that because I think that I've created a safe space for them to be able to do that. And I've instilled confidence in them to be able to feel like they can do that. I would say for the future, you know, one of the things that we have is pet bereavement leave. And I personally had to use that last year. And that's actually what led to my book that is coming out next month.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I'm so like, excited you're bringing that up. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Congratulations, by the way. That's so exciting. And it looks like big things are happening. I can't wait to read it because my fur babies mean the world to me too.
Yes, thank you. I was so surreal to hold it. Like I feel like my husband and I was just talking about this last night. He's like, I feel like the way things are happening for you with like the sponsors that are happening and the book signing event becoming a bigger thing, like the level of excitement, but also like every time somebody buys it, I'm excited. And then I also like want to vomit at the same time. Cause I'm just like, it's the same as like when you launch your business, right? Like you're so excited, but you're also like, oh my God, this is happening.
Yeah.
It's that vulnerability with confidence, like mixed in. It's such a weird duality of emotions at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I am really proud of it. And I am excited for it. What am I excited for the future is so proud of the culture that we've built and that I've had things like pet bereavement leave that in black and white signals to my employees, like I really do care about you beyond your job title. And I understand things outside of work will impact your life at work. And so I'm now championing, I want other companies to adopt pet bereavement leave into their policies. I'm doing a lot of media around it. Even if it's a single day, I think it starts the conversation. And it also, again, like from a talent retention perspective, a lot of people are choosing not to have human kids these days. I think 70% of households have a dog, according to Forbes. There's so many reasons I think that this would be a benefit for employers to want to add for their own like talent retention strategies. But for me, like the empathy part of it, it's this whole empathy-driven leadership. My moment that mattered happened to be this pet bereavement leave, but I think there's a lot of moments that matter within your employees' lives, and good and bad, like good of like things to celebrate and what can we be doing around those, that I'm excited to be talking more about that. Like I have been so head down the last 5 years in building my business and getting ourselves like set up to really help as many clients as we can. And all of the processes, SOP,
yes,
training, that now I think we're going into year 6 and I'm doing more things like this. And I'm so honored I get to be on your podcast. I'm honored others want to talk to me about these things and that I get to talk about them. So So that's what I'm really looking forward to. I'm like excited, like shaking and excited about it.
That's amazing. And it's so beautiful because when you start the business, I know you can relate, like you're wearing a million hats, and not that you're not doing that anymore, but it sounds like to me with the growth of your organization and the success that you've seen, you're now able to really sit in that CEO role and do these other even passion projects that you're doing with the book, which is going to be a passion project turned into huge success. I can feel it. I can see it already happening. I'm so excited for you. And it's really cool to see that you use something that was so close to your heart as well. You know, I think that's when success naturally unfolds too, is when you truly are doing something you're passionate about. So yeah. With the book that you're writing, I know it's very close to your heart and it's going to be huge. I can't wait to see that. So before we wrap up today, can you share your social handles with the listeners so they can give you a follow and connect with you, as well as let them know where they can purchase your new book?
Yes, absolutely. So my Instagram is Erika, E-R-I-K-A, _ Sinner. It is Sinner, S-I-N-N-E-R. So you'll find me on Instagram. My dogs have an Instagram too. They are crazy. The number 4, P-E-I, pay, if you want to follow them. They're the inspiration behind my book. And then my book is set to come out March 21st, which is Kingston's birthday. And there's more information on that on www.petsherfamily.info. And I'm excited. I mean, we've got local sponsors, but also like national sponsors like Lab of Love. There's a Stanford psychologist who's flying in for the book signing. I mean, it's really gaining some momentum, and I'm really proud. So if you have a pet that is your family, I would love for you to check it out. And even just from a leadership, empathy-driven leadership, connect with me on Instagram, and I love to hear from you.
I love it. Thank you so much, Erika. I'm so excited about your new book and that we got to chat today. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. I know the listeners will get a lot of value out of our conversation today and everything you had to share. I cannot wait to talk with you soon. So let's all go out and embrace those difficult conversations to grow as leaders and individuals. And until next time, that's a wrap.
There you have it. Another episode of Hustle and Heart. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your app and connect with me on social media so you don't miss a beat. I'll see you next time on the Hustle and Heart podcast.